Hello and welcome to a special edition of Midori House here on Monocle 24 with me, Hugo MacDonald. In 1 week's time, the world's design industry will descend on Milan for the 51st edition of the Milan Furniture Fair, otherwise known as Salone del Mobile. It's difficult to talk about the Salone without lapsing into superlatives. It's the biggest, most important, most international, most exhaustive and exhausting event of its kind. It takes over the city of Milan for a week, occupying any and every space big enough to house a chair. And for 7 days and nights, the design industry plots its course for the year ahead. To get a read on the event, I'm joined in Studio One by three gentlemen, each Salone veterans, each with a different mission or purpose for attending the fair. James Mayer is the founder and owner of Viaduct, one of London's leading contemporary design showrooms. Gareth Williams is senior tutor of design products at the Royal College of Art. And Michael Anastasiades is one of London's most respected industrial designers. Welcome, each of you, to Midori House. Thank you very much for coming in. I wonder, maybe a good place to start is by just painting a little bit of a picture about what Salone is for our listeners, many of whom might have heard of it, but probably haven't been to it. Michael, what does Salone del Mobile mean for you?
I think probably for me it's the biggest international fair of its kind. And I would refer to it as the biggest because every year, looking at the press and hearing from people, it's always another city that is doing a design fair. And it so happened that they're coordinated in such a way that is immediately as soon as one finishes, then the next one started. So it's how do you actually choose where you go? And Milan for me has always been the most important one to attend.
I think in the last count, there was something crazy like 80 design fairs throughout the year in various places. Mm. And that number is growing and growing and growing. But people do say that if you only go to one, it has to be to Milan for Salone.
Absolutely.
Is that the case for both of you, James and Gareth, as well?
Oh, yes. I don't go to any of the others, apart from maybe London, and that's because I live here, but I don't visit the other fairs at all.
Yeah. So you can really get by as a leading figure in the design industry just by attending Salone.
Well, I'm sure I'm missing all sorts of other wonderful stuff elsewhere, but I've always felt that by visiting Milan, you kind of feed up for the whole year and you'll store up a load of information and ideas and contacts that last you through the year.
And James, I mean, the scale is something that I always find difficult trying to explain to people who've never been. And it really is huge. And I mean, Milan is not a huge city necessarily, but between the fairgrounds out at Row, which is where all the sort of furniture companies have stands and show their new products, which is an enormous, huge space in itself, like several airports stuck together, to the city itself, which really does open up for anybody and everybody to come and hire a space and show their work.
I think the listeners may not understand quite the actual scale of the fairground, and it's like 30 Earls Courts stuck end to end with moving pavements and just droves of people. I mean, I only need to visit about four of the halls, which are the main contemporary ones. And you've just about recovered from that, and then you go into the town, and then it's just every single space has something in it. And half the fun of it, of course, which is why it becomes special Milan in April, is that a lot of those private spaces get opened up, and you don't see them otherwise. So it's as much of a thrill to see the buildings as the furniture that's there.
I've always felt that the for people who haven't been to the Milan Furniture Fair, a way of explaining it, a good analogy is actually the Edinburgh Festival, where you've got the official festival, which is often the kind of classical music and the high art and the fine art and the theatre. But you've also got the fringe show, which is, if anything, is bigger. So in Milan, you've got the Salone, which is the original furniture fair since the 1960s. But you've got everything else happening in the fringe, all those other districts, all those other shows, all those independent things going on, which is the equivalent of the Edinburgh Fringe. And together they pull together to make this enormous event.
Exactly. And so the one has the sort of official business industry side. The other one is actually the fringe
it's equivalent as what provides as, the, as much as it's a business opportunity.
The energy and
actually the
fun.
Most exciting part.
Exactly. I always long for a Salone where I can go and not have to visit the fair at all.
I agree.
It's a relatively new building by Massimiliano Fuxus. And I think everybody hates it, don't they?
I don't mind.
I think it's very efficient, actually.
Do you?
I really do. And
I hate it.
It is a bit soul-destroying as you come up the escalators from the subway and you can look down that, I think it's a mile long, is it? That central walkway, and your heart sinks and you just think, I'm just never going to get to the other end and back. I just can't do this.
The next stage that happens at the fair is normally happens to me about 11 o'clock on the first morning, where I stand in one of the aisles and I just want to scream, the world does not need another chair.
But I think it's actually the first time you go is the scariest, especially encountering such a large-scale building and trying to navigate your way around it. But if you go back again, and especially if you know the halls that you're going to visit, I think it's actually quite efficient.
I know, and as you say, James, of the 26 halls that I think there are, there's really only ever 3 or 4 or 5 that you are relevant for any one person who's attending the fair. Do you think it's the case that the more you go, the more you know what to leave out, and then the more enjoyable it becomes?
I think so. I think that on your first visit, you're sucking in everything, every possible image and every piece of furniture. You've never seen any of these things before and it's absolutely exhausting. You go the next time and you realise that actually quite a lot of these things you've seen the previous time, not everything changes every time in the trade show part of it anyway. So you can actually edit your visit a lot more. And also you learn the tricks of the trade about how to negotiate the city itself by very assiduously planning your routes and making sure that you visit key sites that are nearby and really just work out where you're going to go and when you're going to be there. And
always having the number of a taxi firm in your phone as well.
Or two.
But it depends also what type of visitor you are, I guess.
Well, this brings me on to the next thing that I wanted to talk about, was actually for each of you to explain kind of how you visited and what you do. Michael, maybe you could start.
Well, it changed. For me, it changed a lot since I started going to the fair. I started going to the fair as a student in the early 90s and then extended that pilgrimage almost every year to being a young designer, trying to absorb ideas, trying to set up, a studio and try to find a direction more than anything, until now, which is more of a very scheduled, very structured trip of actually going there to visit specific people, to see certain stands and have meetings with manufacturers at the same time exhibiting in all these fringe shows. So
you've been through a range of different
exactly. So it's for me, it's actually quite interesting to keep going there because it's always changing.
And does it give you enough sort of impetus to work throughout the rest of the year, do you think? Do you feel the need to go to other fairs as well? Or?
Some of them, yes, because just purely because of the fact that I have to participate in them, or I've been invited to participate, or I work with companies that actually exhibit in these fairs. But Milan is by far the most important one in my schedule, my yearly schedule.
James, how do you, as a retailer and buyer, sort of approach Milan?
I wear lots of hats when I go there. One is curiosity, and then two is the kind of trade bit. So ideally, day one would be arriving early in the week, is to get down to Tortona, which is the kind of secondary bit to the main fair, I suppose, second area, and get there before the crowds get there, and spend a bit of time down there, and I'm still awake enough to go combing the little streets around the back and see what smaller things are going. And then it's into the fair, quick whiz around each of those four halls, and then I go back and then have the meetings and do that. I need to get a feel for the show to start with.
So you do a recce, and then do you set up meetings when you're there, or do you sort of try and have all these appointments set up before you go?
I try and avoid setting up meetings beforehand, and just because I don't know what I'm, where I'm going to be at whatever time, so it's only on a day, is calling on the stand and say, well, hey, are you free in an hour's time or something, and do it that way.
And Gareth, what about you? I mean, you sort of used to work at the V&A. Mm-hmm. Did you go to Salone from that role as well?
Yes, I back in the 90s when I was started as a curator at the V&A, specialising in 20th century and contemporary furniture, and that took me there. I wanted to see what was new, really, in design. And so from that point, I would go every year with a wonderful remit just to look. So I would really comb the main fair and the fringe part of the show, really just get a sense of what's happening, to meet the people who are doing design, to immerse myself in it. And that would fuel me through the rest of the year. And then I started writing reviews of it for various publications. A couple of years I had film crews who followed me to, you know, do their reports on it. And but I was always an observer. I never really had anything to do other than go and observe. And now, with a different role working at the RCA, we now do a big show in Milan. So after many years of luxuriating and not actually having to do anything there, all of a sudden I found myself having to, in a small way anyway, get involved in doing a show myself in Milan, which changes the perspective.
I'm sure.
It stops you actually going around and seeing quite so much. When you know that you've got
well, you have no time, simply, yeah. I think, if you're doing your own...
Well, I mean, I'm not doing it on my own by any means, but it does mean that you have a sort of a sense of responsibility for one show that you have to keep attending to.
This is what I always actually find quite interesting, is going and speaking to the exhibitors, PR teams and things, and that each person's kind of perspective of Salone is so different based on what they're doing. Like, so many people literally do not see anything else unless it's out of hours in the evenings, or maybe they tag a day onto the end of it. Whereas, sort of from my perspective, I have to try and see as much as possible, speak to as many people as possible. Sort of you get a bit tetchy if you're having to spend more than half an hour in one place. that's sort of the exhausting element that I referred to at the beginning. But I think we're all agreed it's an incredible spectacle. Mm-hmm. And it's certainly, there's nothing boring about it.
No, not at all.
You each say that you've been attending it for many years in various guises. Do you feel it's changed and developed in any way other than just having got bigger?
It's certainly grown and grown and grown. And I don't know whether that's necessarily for the better, because it's even more overwhelming now. So in many ways, I find it too big now.
Again, I think that's something we'd probably all agree with. It's certainly something that everybody spends a lot of the week talking about. It's just the sheer scale is
And it's
all-encompassing and overwhelming.
It's a trade show, first and foremost, and I must admit I haven't been up to the Salone for the fairground for a couple of years. But I've really noticed over the last 10 or 15 years a change in the kind of fringe-type shows, which have... at various areas, particularly the Tortona area, which used to be young and fresh and edgy, is just so horribly corporate.
With
clients that I don't really understand why car companies, for example, are showing at the Milan Furniture Fair. And
This is something I want to pick up on later.
It's lost interest. Yeah. And there's a danger of it just becoming this sort of over-invested,
Everybody's fighting
a bit of a
free
fall,
I think.
Yeah,
that's the
meat market
problem. And
Well, like I said, this is something I want to bring up, but I think maybe let's have a song in the meantime. This is Blink and You'll Miss a Revolution by Cut Copy. Welcome back to Midori House, where we are talking all things Salone del Mobile here in Midori House in Studio One. I want to pick up on something we touched upon before we went to the song, which is the increased commercial side of Salone. And we've mentioned the Tortona area, which is sort of the former industrial heartland of Milan that has been taken over by all sorts of companies and was once the sort of young, edgy fringe side. Increasingly, these sort of all sorts of industries have moved in and partnered with various designers, companies from... It sort of seems to have got out of control. There's everybody from all the major car brands, quite a lot of the sort of drinks brands, both sort of champagne and also everything from like Coca-Cola is down there too. Do you feel like it's has gotten out of control, that side of it?
Absolutely. I think it's actually becomes a very unpleasant place to visit now in that kind of late afternoon. Mm-hmm. And especially now it's got to the stage of, I don't know, three beers for €5 level of stalls on the street. And all you have then, it's no longer for the design industry. It's just like the design tourist and it just is somewhere to avoid.
It's confusing, isn't it?
But that said, I think it's a healthy sign in a way of a kind of completely unregulated event that actually does allow for... moments of real inspiration and creativity because it's completely unregulated and anyone can go and do anything. It's galling when you're trying to trudge the streets to write a review or to catch up with shows that you know are hidden there somewhere and you feel you're trudging through a load of rubberneckers or just stuff that is not relevant and interesting to you personally. But I think you kind of have to allow for it to exist.
As a designer, Michael, presumably designers actually quite supportive of this because it's one of the main sort of avenues in which they get to earn a bit of money.
Of course, but it's also what I was going to say is that other areas are taking over and are much more interesting and they're spread all over the city. So the good thing, okay, one side is that Tortona has become very commercial and it has been taken over by the big companies, but then that gave room to other areas to come up and that are much more exciting. I remember Tortona used to be almost an impossible area to get to and travel to. It felt that it was so far from everything else because everything was around the center. And then now is one of the easiest spots to get to. And then there's some other areas which are more difficult now and they're, of course, much more exciting.
Why do you think that is this big influx of other industries wanting to get in on the design scene and also on Salone specifically? Gareth?
I suppose it's because of the cachet of cutting-edge design if you're a big brand and it's about using design as an element of your PR to build your own brand. It's not really necessarily about supporting design itself. That said, I think there have been some fantastic moments of enlightened corporate patronage, maybe not on quite the scale of a major car brand, but something like the way that Swarovski has supported design in Milan with shows since, I think, about 2002, every year of some form or another. And an awful lot of money has been spent on presenting those projects and on supporting designers of all sorts. And I think that's a really enlightened use of the Salone and the kind of platform that the Salone gives for a brand that may have kind of a big budget to spend there.
Yeah, and something else that I'm noticing is that more and more sort of homegrown fashion brands are getting in on the action too. And getting in on the action maybe has a slightly negative connotation, but certainly many of the Italian fashion brands have in the last few years launched furniture lines and homeware lines too. Do you think, is this all sort of pointing to the fact that people are either seeing that design is an industry that sort of affects everybody and there's a lot of room for growth, both sort of financially but also in terms of sort of new markets?
I suppose it's an instance of a convergence of different elements of design. So with furniture and homewares and fashion, it's about lifestyling, isn't it? And so the fashion houses have tended to lead the way on that. But I think there's also an element, again, of enlightened patronage. When you think of, for example, Fendi and the way they have produced shows in Milan and elsewhere, working with young product designers particularly, not at all to produce any kind of merchandise for themselves, not to make anything to sell, but to promote their qualities of craftsmanship and the material qualities that are associated with their brand. So I think that's a great marriage of design with the fashion industry. I think it's less interesting when a fashion house produces a line of, you know, expensive sofas, which can happen quite often, but it's more interesting when they really do work with cutting-edge designers.
But fashion brands have always participated, I think, in the furniture fair, just purely because of their location, of their main stores in Milan. And I remember everything used to be always happening around the center. And that's where most of the fashion houses are. And they would host events and they would sponsor events and sometimes their own events or sometimes other more independent and more exciting. So I think fashion has always had a strong link.
Yeah, inevitably in Milan.
Design, also, especially in Milan.
And I think that there is a value in that cross-referencing, for sure, between those different industries. And yes, it is boosting design generally. And I think you get some very interesting offshoots. I think it was Sony was 2 years ago with their installation there. In many ways, it was the most exciting event of the fair for me. And I thought, God, that's extraordinary. I think that was Volcano Year. And that was suddenly integrating sound into pieces of furniture, and that technology is rippling its way through. So I think when you get new ways of thinking that end up with furniture, then you can end up with some very exciting results.
Everybody can learn from each other.
Yeah.
Yeah. Another step of development is the fact that obviously it has to a certain extent been always a global event, but it's more and more the whole world travels to Milan. And in the sort of 8 or 9 times that I've been going, I've seen each year sort of this many more Chinese, many more Russians, many more Brazilians. It's sort of maybe quite predictable. But do you notice the sort of global aspect of it has increased, and how has that changed it, do you think?
Absolutely. It has become an international platform in every respect, and I think it will become even more international.
And that makes it more interesting, or does it still?
I think, of course, it does, because it is. Milan is an international platform. I mean, if you consider that, yes, this is the biggest fair of its kind, then I think it has to acquire that role. It has to get that role.
It's interesting to remember, actually, that the Salone, when it was founded in the early 60s, was only actually allowed Italian manufacturers into the fairground, and it was only much later, into the 70s, I think, or late 60s, that overseas companies were even allowed to show within the Salone, and then it was only probably any every other year or something. And it was actually quite difficult right up into the 80s and even into the 90s, probably even now, James, you probably vouch for this, for non-Italian companies to actually gain stands in the prestigious parts of the Salone itself. And that was one of the reasons that led to the development of the Fringe, because it was people wanting to show in the context of Milan but unable to show in the Salone itself, it became this more international event.
Absolutely, and that's where it's escalated. On the going back to the kind of Chinese and the Brazilians and things, first of all, there was that complete paranoia that it was going to get knockoffs were going to happen left, right and centre. I'm sure that's an element of it. But I think one of the more exciting things is that from the people from China and the Far East and Brazil and wherever, then gradually that those design lessons will go back to their own countries. So young designers coming out for more work from there is very exciting. I'm really looking forward to contemporary Chinese pieces coming through. Mm-hmm. So again, it's that melting pot, which is fantastic.
And do you think the Italians welcome that as well? Or do they feel slightly that, you know, the focus isn't always on them now?
I think there's quite a lot of ambivalence, actually, in Italy towards the perceived threat of the Far East. For a long time, I think the Italian furniture industry was terribly complacent about its role and its power. But I can't believe that that's the case any longer, just because of the enormous extent of the market in China and elsewhere in the Far East, and the enormous extent of the industry. And I'd be very surprised if the Italians weren't a little bit more kind of anxious about it.
Yeah, they've had to pull their socks up a little bit.
I suspect so. Yeah. But I also suspect that, that there's a certain amount of furniture that we perceive as being Italian that's actually being manufactured in the Far East now.
By Italian companies. But I think for me it's very interesting the issue of copyright and how that links in with the Italian manufacturers, because I think there's quite a strong movement at the moment from initiative from the Italian fabricators to actually have some control over copyright and getting their products copied in the Far East. So I think by making it into an international platform, it becomes more public. So somehow these people come and participate in the fair itself. So therefore, it's in their interest that suddenly they feel almost that they are not allowed to copy anymore, that the world, becomes... it's sort of more inclusive somehow. Yeah, and therefore, if you're part of it, then you feel much more reluctant to go and copy something.
And also by keeping it in Milan, keeping it within Italy, keeping that as the sort of central focal point, it maintains, even if it's perhaps a little bit more symbolic than actual, but that kind of Italian control of this part of the design industry.
Who do you think really benefits the most from Salone nowadays? Is it the... designers or manufacturers? Why do you say that, Carlos?
Well, I mean, there was a sort of moment in about, I don't know, 2000, when all of a sudden every other person that you met and every other show that you went to seemed to be Dutch. And it was the... I think we talked just now about the perceived challenge from China to Italy, but there was definitely a moment when... Amsterdam and other, Eindhoven were kind of standing up, and the cutting edge moved from Milan to Amsterdam, and then was exported back again. And that's still the case. I mean, I think that the Dutch are still well ahead of the game of many other nations showing within Milan, both in terms of the companies who become very embedded, like Moy, who are huge now, relatively huge, and also just the independent shows and the schools. They always seem to be that much sharper, that much more ahead of the game than many other things that you see there.
But it is a show for everybody, really. I think whether you're a designer or you're a manufacturer or whether you're a journalist and you're going there for press, then I think there is something for everybody.
For everyone.
It's exciting for absolutely every single
James,
level.
Do you find it, sort of as a retailer, given the sheer scale, I mean, is that something that makes your job easier when you're there because everybody is there? Or is it sort of slightly easier to do business somewhere where it's a bit smaller and you can take a little bit more time? And
I think that the beauty of Milan is that you can pick up on the trends very early on. And so you can get a flavour of what is likely to be coming up over the next year, or you can just say, oh, God, everybody's going that route. I don't like it. And so I think that is one of the first things that I like doing when I actually get to the fair itself, is just see, A, who's playing follow my leader and who is actually coming up with original pieces and why. And in many ways that... one of the values was when the recession hit, if you like. So 2009, walking around the fair was amazing because you could just walk along the aisles and say, unnecessary, 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 and really prioritise things.
Yeah.
And I think that's what I've learnt over the years, is to get that clear idea early on, and then I can edit swiftly.
Editing swiftly, we can pick up on that after another song. This is Kids by MGMT. That was Kids by MGMT. You're listening to Midori House here live from Studio One in London. After Kids, Gareth, maybe it's a good opportunity for you to talk about your role as senior tutor at the RCA. And you last year brought out a selling show that was sort of slightly different from the RCA exhibition that's happening this year. Maybe you could just start by saying what happened last year.
Well, last year was the second time that we'd shown as taken a big design products exhibition to Milan. Design products being the program at the RCA that I teach on, and design products encompasses furniture, industrial design, lighting, that kind of thing. Last year, though, we took something called the Design Products Collection, which is a small selling collection of designs by students and by alumni, recent alumni of the course, which was really intended as a kind of stepping stone for those students and graduates to take their designs into a more commercial sphere. As yet, we haven't done a second collection, so I didn't want to take the first collection and show it again. It didn't seem to be much point, but eventually we will get around to doing another collection for the Design Products Collection. This year, we're doing a different approach altogether. We're doing a show called Paradise, which is something like, I think, 60, 70, 80 different students from across the whole Royal College of Art.
No way.
This year is the 175th anniversary of the Royal College of Art. So this is one of a number of events to celebrate that anniversary. So it seemed timely to not only show students of design products, but to throw the net a bit more broadly to represent practice across the whole of the college. So, the students came up with a theme of paradise, really as a kind of response to the economic collapse and the crisis. And we didn't want to do a kind of depressing show. We wanted to do an uplifting show. So this is a sort of vision of where the future could lie, I suppose, for these designers and artists. So there are people from sculpture, printmaking, design interactions, across the board, really, architecture, all sorts of places. It should be a really dynamic show.
And where are you showing?
We're showing, again, the third time in the Lambrate district. We were really lucky to get in on the ground floor of that area in sort of northeast Milan when it launched 3 years ago. But we're in a different venue than last year. We're in Ventura, Via Ventura number 4. For any listeners who find themselves in Milan, do come and visit the show. It's very important that you come to see it. It's right in the heart of that district, and we've got some great neighbours. I think Jaime Hion is showing around the corner, and a lot of the other design colleges from around the world also choose Lambrate to show. So it's a really kind of vibrant, non-commercial feel to that zone at the moment.
Exactly. I mean, everybody, when Lambrate District opened up a couple of years ago, said this is what Tortona felt like when it opened.
It was true. I fully expect that in a few years' time, Lambrate will have changed again and that we'll all be busy trying to find the next zone of old warehouses and industrial units that the developers are keen to exploit, because that's really what it's about, isn't it? Same with Tortona. It's about redeveloping and regenerating an area of the city, using design as a tool to do that, I think.
But it's all over the city now. I mean, it's
Milan is only so big.
Yeah,
how many more industrial areas?
Every year is new areas coming up and exhibitions take place everywhere.
How do you, and Michael, you obviously have a lot of experience in this too, how do you go about taking an exhibition to Milan? I mean, it's months and months of blood, sweat and tears, presumably.
At least 6 months of really careful planning.
Screaming down the phone.
Not only that, I think the organizational part and actually shipping the stuff over, setting the exhibition, you try to keep control of the situation and be as independent as you possibly can and actually manage the production fully from the UK, because you take your own people to set up the stands. You even take your own materials, because there's so many companies there trying to do exactly the same thing that you're doing that it is absolutely impossible to rely on anybody local to get such a
production. But Gareth, if you're taking a show that has 60 students showing their work, I mean, that must take a year to set up, surely.
It can't take a year to set up because, of course, it's a student show. So those students don't know a year ahead that they're even interested in showing there or what work they've got. So it all really happens in the period from late December onwards. I suppose in the autumn, the task starts of trying to find a space. And that's one of the most difficult things for anybody entering the market of trying to show in Milan, and it's knowing who to talk to about getting a space. And there are various people who kind of broker spaces. I'm not going to let on how we find our spaces.
Is there a lot of wheeling, dealing kind of
well,
money being
Well, there
can
be slipped? A certain amount, not in my experience, but I'm sure there are for those really prestigious and more corporate locations. But of course, we're an art school and we would never get involved in any kind of backhanders.
No, of course not.
And then I agree with Michael. It's about making sure you just take everything with you. You know, you can't rely on hiring a ladder or a zip-up tower or something, because all the hires all go really quickly, because there are so many exhibitions being built simultaneously over the same weekend. And you only get the venue from maybe Saturday morning, and then the show has to be ready by Monday evening. So it's a really, really fast build, and you have to just plan very, very meticulously about exactly what you're going to do when you get there and who's going to do it and when. It's quite a military operation.
It must be. I mean, what's the logistics? I mean, the team of people that you have to...
Well, we have this fantastic team of at least 60 people to call upon, which is another great advantage of doing a big student show. And we divide the student body into different teams. There's one that deals only with logistics, with packaging and moving and building the show, and another one that designs it, another team that deals with the communication and building the website and doing the posters and the publications and invites, another team that does events. So I think this year there are various talks and events and a private view and all those kinds of collateral things that go on. So it's about finding people who have the right skills and to sort of step up to the mark, really.
It's an amazing operation. It makes me feel very guilty for ever moaning during Salona, because I think I should probably have it the easiest out of everyone then.
I think you do. But at the time...
Just cruising in.
Oh, no, no, there's a lot of hard work that gets done then as well. But is it still a good platform for young people to show in? I mean,
I think it is, but it gets debated, because there are those people who feel that it's absolutely the wrong thing for students to do, to go and show their ideas in this unregulated place where they're going to get ripped off and they're going to get overexposed and they're potentially going to lose their intellectual property rights. That's, I suppose, a risk, but I've yet to actually come across a hard example of that having happened to a student. I think the experience of students showing their work there and getting some immediate attention and getting international feedback about their work, or maybe not, maybe actually discovering that they're not nearly as great as they think they are, and you know, the school of hard knocks, I think that is also very valuable. So I tend to firmly on the side of the benefit to students of showing there.
It is a benefit, because I think that it could work completely the other way, that by actually showing there, then you make the work more public. Therefore, you make more people aware. The press picks it up. They write about it, and therefore, it's printed, it's recorded, it's there. So even if they are,
it's in your defence that it's your, yes,
then,
it's true.
Then it will work to their advantage.
And I think it helps professionalise designers. If designers are moving into this world of furniture and related product design, as we've established this afternoon, it's quite clearly the case that Milan is the professional marketplace for that. So students may feel that they're ready to be independent freelance or freelance designers, but they're not. They're still students, and the experience of having to present themselves
but the
within
support
that
is phenomenal.
Fair is the best way of learning about how to become a designer in that respect.
And I think that the Gareth's counterpoint is that being there and part of it, and also it is just showing the students how enormous that market is. And they are just a little factor in it. It's very easy to think as a design student in the UK, oh, I can be a designer. But when you're suddenly confronted by everything that is happening around the world, then it's quite a salutary lesson. And also that, you know, that those designers are wandering around as well, seeing new things. So they're getting new ideas that are sparking them off. So I think that's hugely valuable.
It's an enormous sort of part of the education experience.
I think it's really is the lifeblood of the whole enormous Salone. Is this it needs this constant injection of new talent and new ideas, and where else is that going to come from really than the next generation of designers as represented by the students who
Absolutely.
Go.
Absolutely.
Well, it's great that the institutions actually provide that support for students, because I remember back in my days there was absolutely no support. I mean, I graduated from the college, and I remember going to Milan as a student, and there was no presence there from the Royal College.
Well, the Royal College has shown groups of students or pockets within the college have shown there regularly over the years.
Yes.
But perhaps it's been rather under the radar because there have been smaller projects.
Well, mostly in the more recent years, I would say. And now you find colleges, the Eindhoven Design
Academy. Well,
Eindhoven
Academy, kind of... set the bar very high.
They did
actually.
Set the bar very high.
As does ECAL in Lausanne, which, yes. And in fact, when I first went to the Royal College, I felt that those two colleges were exploiting the potential of Milan as a means of communicating the values of those colleges, and the Royal College really wasn't present and really should be. So that's one of the reasons why we started doing big shows there.
Well... Gentlemen, I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it there. That's all we've got time for on Midori House. Thank you very much, James Mayer, Gareth Williams and Michael Anastasiades, for sharing your insight, experience and thoughts with us on the beast that is Salone del Mobile. And I look forward to seeing each of you in the sunny streets of Milan next week. I'm happy to say that we'll be taking Monocle 24 on the road to Milan for the Salone. Tune in at 7 a.m. London time, 8 a.m. Central European time, from Tuesday the 17th to Friday the 20th of April. I'll be presenting an hour live each morning from the studios of Il Sole 24, bringing you a great mix of characters from the design industry and all the latest news and views as they unfold day by day in Milan. But until then, thank you very much for listening today. I'm Hugo MacDonald, and we're going to leave you with Little Dragon. This is Feather.